I'm a little squeaky this morning, so we shall see. We'll make it through, I think. But you know, the reason I'm a little squeaky is because, you know, yesterday, if you were a guy, yesterday you weren't here, you missed really the most unbelievable man event ever in the history of mankind. I'm just saying. Just putting it right there. I would ask all the guys that were here yesterday just to kind of raise their hand, but we know that's not going to happen. So it'd be like, because we're all walking around and doing that. And just in case you're wondering, the orange team won. So I'm just saying, you know, we've done, yeah, that's right. And every year I get accused of stacking the team, but I'm just going to tell you right now, in 8 years of doing this, this is the first time I've ever won, ever, in all the time doing that. So I'm really excited about that, and obviously only about 15 other guys are. But we had I think 71 or 72 guys here yesterday for that, and just an amazing event. We had 32 guys that had never participated in that event before. A lot of them were outside of our church, and that's the reason we do that, so that you can connect with what we're doing here, connect with people that are here, and be able to enjoy and be able to be a part of that. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we do that. So today, we're starting a new series that I've entitled Click to Activate. And the reason I'm calling it that is because I believe that God has been preparing us for a long time for this. You know, for those of you that don't know the story of at least our time here at Friendship, 14 years ago, actually last month was our 14th year anniversary here at Friendship Church. 14 years ago, we came here at a Friendship. We were at a church. I was a pastor of a church in Michigan. God had blessed and done amazing things, but yet our time there was over with. God was moving us on somewhere else to do something else, and we really wanted to plant a church, or I really wanted. Tracy was like, maybe. But we really wanted to plant a church and do something fresh and do something new, and Friendship had been a church for a while, but it was kind of dying. And our first Sunday here, when we took that call, there was 47 people. That includes the kids, the babies. I think there might have been a dog or two. And that was 14 years ago. And it was an amazing thing, an amazing journey to watch and kind of replanting. And about 11 years ago, we restructured everything. We took several years and we prayed about it. We dreamed about it. We wrote stuff down. We got rid of stuff. We did stuff. First 3 years here, it was like, okay, what are we killing next? And it was just kind of how we were doing, trying to figure out what is it that God has called us to do. And so for the last decade plus maybe a year or so, I believe God's been preparing us for this next step. And I've been praying over the last several months and talking with the elders over the last several months and going, guys, this is what I'm thinking. What are you thinking? We talked about it. We prayed about it. And so over the next 4 weeks, first my challenge would be, if you are part of Friendship Church in any way, shape, or form, be here over the next 4 weeks. Because we're going to lay out over the next 4 weeks what we believe God is going to do for the next 10 years here at Friendship Church. And so I want to challenge you to be here and don't miss it. If you're sick, if you're out of town on a trip or something like that, get online and listen to it so that you are aware of what we're doing next. But today, specifically, I'm going to lay the foundation. Because the foundation is, why does this matter? So, see, a lot of times people go to church because, oh, mom and dad went to church. Well, it's Sunday, you go to church. I want to go to church because I want to feel good. I want to be able to check it off the list because there's people that know me there. And if I see them at work, they'll be like, hey, where were you? And then I'll feel guilty. So I come to church. That's not what we want church to be. That's never what God intended church to be. Church is not a social club for the already convinced, but it's a place where people come to hear about the message of Jesus Christ and their lives be transformed from the inside out by what God has called and really calling us to be something more like his son, Jesus Christ. So what we're doing here matters. It is significant. It is important. And so really everything that we're talking about over the next 3 weeks is going to be based upon these three statements that I'm going to make about the church. And it's not just Big C Church, right? Like everyone that's been saved, the Big C Church. But it's also Little C Church, our local church here. But it's also even smaller than that. Because a lot of people think that the church is an organization. The church is not an organization. It is an organism. It is made up of living and breathing people. You as an individual are the church. When you go to work, you are a representation. You are an ambassador of the church. When you go and you are at home, you are an ambassador, representation of the church. It is you. This is a building. And quite frankly, I've said it from day one, even when we built this part of the facility and the new part of it, if we need to tear this part down to build something new that will be better, this is not a monument to our massive awesomeness. No, this is simply a tool that's to be used. That's all this is. There's nothing sacred about it. People are like, well, listen, you shouldn't lie in church. You're the church. You should never lie because you're the church. See, that's how it works. Well, don't steal because you're in church. Well, now listen, don't swear because you're in church. This is just a building. This is just a place. God goes with you everywhere. He sees it all. Just saying. Okay, so here are three statements. All right, I'm going to give you the first one, and we're going to talk about it because these are so important. This is the foundation of everything we do and why it matters. The first thing that we need to understand is that the church is the hope of the world. The church is the hope of the world. You go, well, just bear with me. The church is the hope, singular, definitive article, the. There is nothing else in this world that can bring the hope that the church brings. That's it. The church is the hope of the world. Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 18, Jesus Christ is walking with his disciples, and they're kind of walking and talking, and they're having questions, and they're saying, Jesus, why did you do this? So how did you turn the bread? How did you, you know, what did you, and they're talking about stuff, and Jesus stops them. He says, listen, Matthew 16, when Jesus came to the area of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his followers, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Who do all the people, you guys are out there mingling while I'm teaching. You guys are out there when we're feeding the 5,000, you're handing them baskets, and they're going, where did this come from? This is so cool. And you're out there where the guys are, I turned the water into wine at the wedding, and they drank it, and they're like, this is interesting. So here's the question. When you're out there talking to all these people, who do they think I am? That's a good question. In fact, that is the really foundational question of the church. Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? And say, how you answer that question will determine everything else in your life. And so he says, who do they say that I am? And here's their response. I think it's kind of interesting. He said, they answered, some say that you're John the Baptist. You know, your cousin, where the two of you were in the same room at the same time. You ever seen those YouTube videos like, I think these are the same person. They've never been in the same room at the same time. And they look alike. Listen, they were literally in the same place at the same time. John the Baptist actually baptized Jesus. So they were like known. And John the Baptist had just been beheaded, so he was dead. So I'm not sure that's a real compliment. But hey, some think that you're John the Baptist, the prophet, the one that would come. And then they go, and some others think you're Elijah, considered one of the greatest prophets in the Old Testament. And he performed all sorts of miracles, and he was amazing. He was his like shadow cast over all the other prophets. They're like, man, they think you are on par with Elijah. They think you're a prophet. And then they said, but some others think that you're Jeremiah. Now, this was an interesting thing because Jeremiah, when he was alive, they hated him. Because he kept teaching, if you don't stop sinning, God's judgment's going to come. And they're like, shut up, Jeremiah. We're having fun. And then, I love this, God's judgment comes, and they blame Jeremiah. They're like, we should kill Jeremiah. It's all his fault. It's like, it's not my fault. I told you it was coming. You didn't listen. It's like a kid getting mad at a parent when they stick their finger in a light socket after the parents told them 20 times, don't do that. And then they're going, you should not have that thing shock me like that. It's a consequence. And they're like, hey, it's Jeremiah. And he's like, I'm not sure that's a great, or one of the other prophets. And see, that's the thing. That's the response that we get today. Jesus, oh, he was a good man. He was a good man. He was a great teacher. Oh, man, I tell you what, he really seemed to love people. But Peter has a great response. And Jesus looks at him. He goes, okay, so they all don't get it. So my question is, who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter answered. Often Peter was, you know, plucking toe jam out of his teeth because he always had his foot in his mouth. But this time, man, he hit it out of the park. He says, you are the Christ, the Messiah, the Savior, the Son of the living God. And I could just see Jesus going, that's right, Peter. You got it. You got it. And he says this, Jesus answered, you are blessed, Simon, son of Jonah, because no person taught you that. You didn't get that on your own, Peter. Not that I don't love you, not that you're not smart, but you didn't come to that conclusion on your own. This was the Father in heaven that showed you who I am. So I tell you that you are Peter. And I love this because some people in some religious denominations will say, oh, look, see, this means Peter's supposed to be in charge of the church. Wouldn't that be interesting? If Jesus Christ founded the entirety of his church upon a guy that betrayed him on the very night that he was crucified, wasn't the point. The term or his name, Peter, is Petras, P-E-T-R-A-S. That's his name. And it means stone. It says, you are Petras, or Peter, stone. And upon this rock, Petra, this massive boulder of truth that you just said, that I am the Son of God, I am the Christ, upon that truth, I will build my church. You see, the whole point of why we're here and what we do is because Jesus is exactly who he said he was. He is the Christ, the Son of the living God. He died for the purpose of setting all mankind free. It doesn't matter what death or darkness or brokenness or hurt or whatever is going on in our world. The power of the cross conquers it all. And he alludes to that here. He says, so I tell you that you are Petros, the small stone, but upon this rock, Petra, I will build my church, and the power of death itself will not be able to defeat it. He goes, listen, the curse of mankind ever since Adam and Eve rejected God's ways is death. Romans chapter 6, 23, Romans 3, 21, that tells us that the wages, the penalty of death, of sin is death, forever separation from God. And upon this truth that I am the Christ, the Son of the living God, upon that truth I will build my church. And on that truth and in the power of that truth, even the power of death itself will not be able to stop it. Because although natural death is going to take place, we're all going to die someday. If you haven't figured that out yet, I'm sorry to break that news to you. You are in the process of dying right now. But death, as far as spiritual death, eternal death, forever separation from God, has no power when it comes to the truth of who Jesus Christ is. And when Jesus Christ shows up in your life, there's no bondage. There's no captivity, there's no sin, there's no past mistakes that can hold you down from becoming who God's called you to be. You go, but you said the church is the hope of the world. That's right, because there is no other organization or team or individual in the world who can do what the church can do. There's not another thing in the world that can do that. The church was given both the right and the responsibility of spreading the saving message of Jesus Christ, the hope-filled promises of God, the healing power of the cross to a broken and messed up world. Only the message of Jesus Christ can break down the walls of division and racism and hate. Only the power of Jesus Christ. That's it. You go, well, I mean, there's a lot of other good stuff out there. I didn't say there's not a lot of good stuff out there. I said that the church is the hope of the world. You see, when Jesus Christ gets a hold of your life, he begins to turn you into the absolute best version of yourself, believe it or not. In fact, the Bible says that he comes in and he makes you a new person from the inside out, and nothing in this world can do that except for Jesus Christ. You go, well, what about religion? I mean, religion is great. You go, aren't we religious? I love it when people ask me if I'm religious. I'm like, no. They're like, aren't you a pastor? Yeah, but I'm not religious, because religion is man's attempt to codify and encapsulate and box in who God is. Listen, if your religion can explain everything about God, it's a pretty empty religion, because if my mind can figure out what God's doing, he's not much of a God. Just think about it. In Isaiah, it says that your ways, his thoughts, everything is above and beyond anything I can even begin to imagine. So religion is man's attempt. You know what? When man codifies or man creates these rules and attempts to get us to what God like, you know what it makes? It doesn't make you better. It often makes you bitter. Some of the angriest, most hateful people in the world are some of the most religious people in the world. Think about it. Because they're following man's attempt to become like God instead of God saying, listen, just be like my son and I'll give you the power to do it. Religion falls way short. Education. You go, oh, education, man. Listen, I've got like 17 PhDs and I've got this and that. That's great. That's great. Maybe you should do something with those things instead of continuing to go to school. But anyways, here we go. Some of the smartest people I know never graduated from high school. Education can fill your head with knowledge, but it cannot heal your heart from hate. You go, well, yeah. What about medicine? Medicine's awesome, right? I mean, like seriously, I'm pretty sure they're going to legalize pot in Indiana. It's going to be awesome. Like, what do you think about that? We'll talk about that later. Okay, medicine. Medicine can fix the broken parts of your body, but it cannot change how you view mankind. It cannot change how you think about others. But the message of Jesus Christ can. You're like, well, yeah, here's what we need to do. We need to create more laws. Because that works. We can't understand. We're going to create a whole new group of law enforcement agencies and police and laws. It's going to be great. Well, you know what? Police and laws, they can tell you what you shouldn't do and penalize you when you do what's wrong, but they cannot change your heart that pulls you to do that which is right. Only Jesus can do that. You're like, well, I know politics. Come on now. But government and politics, that's going to be it, right? Yeah, we all know better than that. There's nothing in the world that can do and bring what the church brings. The church is the hope of the world. And if we don't do it, no one else can. It's not like, hey, well, you know, someone will pick up the slack. No one else can. At Friendship, our vision is to glorify God as an effective and influential church. We want to be as effective as possible with sharing the message of Jesus Christ. We want to influence as many people as possible for the person of Jesus Christ. We recognize and we accept the responsibility that we have of spreading the life-giving, death-defeating message of Jesus Christ. And we want to see as many people as possible come to know Jesus Christ. One of the things that we've said for years is that, listen, if there is one more person on the south side of Indianapolis that doesn't know Jesus Christ, then we are not done yet. Because the church is the hope of the world. The second statement is this. There's nothing like the church when the church is working right. There is nothing like the church when the church is working right. Now, I will also say the opposite is also true. There is nothing like the church when the church is messed up. I tell you what, so y'all know I like to stay up later at night. Tracy goes to bed at like 7:30. And I watch late night TV and also the church channel, but I have recently, because some people that are friends of mine have sent me some of these videos and stuff, and on YouTube, if you search it, it's like wild. These church fights that break out. Have you seen them? You know what I'm talking about? They're like having a business meeting over something, and one person, hey, now listen, I'm going to tell you something. And it's brawl, and the police are called, and I'm like, that doesn't even happen when the government meetings get together. What's happening in the church? Because when the church has lost its focus, when they're all about each other and they're all about getting their own power and authority, when they're all about telling the world what they should be doing and not doing, they get off kilter. And there's nothing like the church when the church is messed up. You look at it and you're like, that's twisted. But when the church is working right, There's nothing in the world like it. Look at this, Acts chapter 2, verse 44 and 47. This is right after the Pentecost, when Peter was gathering with 120 other disciples, and they were praying, and God, man, boom, something happened, and 3,000 people got saved. Well, actually, 3,000 men got saved and baptized that day. And after that, they're like, what do we do with this? And so this is what they do, Acts chapter 2. This is all the believers were together, and they had everything in common. Now, how about that for a statement? They agreed on stuff. Sweet. All right. So they sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. They're like, listen, this person, they were here for the Passover, and they decided to stay because they want to learn more about Jesus, but their money has run out. So if anyone would like to help them, it's going to be like, hey, listen, I've got some property on the outside of Jerusalem. It's kind of close to Samaria, so its property value's gone down. But listen, I'm going to sell that, and I'm going to give it to them. It's going to be great. And they would do that, and that's how they would work. And they're like, listen, if you need it, it's not mine. God gave it to me. God gave me the ability. Here, there you go. Use it. Have it. We want to try to do something as a church and do this. Oh, that's great. Here, here's some of my help to do that. How can I show up and help? They all had it in common. They're all working together. This is every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They didn't even have their own building. They were meeting in like little rooms here and there and doing that. But they wanted to know more. They wanted to be more. And they broke bread, or they ate. They ate dinner together in their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God. Like, listen, they like, you want to come over tonight? That'd be great. What are we gonna do? I don't know. Let's just talk. This is great. Here, have some food. Have some matzo balls. I don't know what they had, but this is great. And I want you to see this next phrase, because this is absolutely crazy. So they're doing all this stuff. They're being like Christ. They're loving each other. They have stuff in common. And it says this, and enjoying the favor of all the people. Everybody either liked them or respected them. Because they're like, you know what? I may not agree with what you teach, but you're living it out. I may not believe the same way that you believe, but you walk it. And that's impressive. You ever met somebody that really had a deep conviction about something? And it was difficult to do what they were saying they were going to do, but they walked that. And you're like, man, mad respect, man. That's impressive. Every time I see y'all posting like videos at like 4:30 in the morning exercise, I'm like, hey, glad it's you. Like, man, that's they said this. Listen, they had, everyone looked at them and said, wow, those people. Notice what it doesn't say. They weren't like, man, crackpots. What's the matter with you guys? Religious weirdos. But watch this next sentence. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. So people looked at them and go, man, I either like it or I respect it. And then the Bible says that every day people were going, because of how you guys are living and because of what you guys are teaching, I want to know more. I want to know more. You see, when we as a church of individuals are living the truth of Jesus Christ every day, as we become more and more like Christ in everything we do, it is attractive. When you try to be religious, it is not attractive. I always struggle when I bump up against somebody and we'll be having a normal conversation. And then they're like, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, oh, God, is it okay that I lie? Because the minute I say, well, I'm a pastor, like, oh, bless the Lord, oh, my soul, praise God. I'm like, come on now. Like, no, seriously, I've got a Jesus bumper sticker on the back of my car. I've got a fish and everything. Listen, let me show you my T-shirt underneath here. I'm like, to me, as a Christian, having grown up in a pastor's home, I'm like, man, don't associate with me because you're weird. Notice this. It was not off-putting. It was attractive. They were like, man, I don't know what's different about you, but I want to know more. Because they were living like Christ. And people will say things to you like, what's different about you? Man, I'd be freaking out if I were in this situation like you were. Man, you handled that so well when X happened. So how about, you know, we can't fix everybody else, but how about we as a church, okay? How about we as a church, and then maybe it'll become, you know, addicting to other churches. We stop running around boycotting everything we think is wrong. Just a thought. We stop running around boycotting and putting posts on Facebook, and we just simply start living out what's right. Do you know I have read the Bible multiple times from cover to cover? I love reading specifically what they call the writings in red of the New Testament where Jesus Christ is talking. And you know what I've discovered? At no point in time did Jesus ever say, I have called you to be the police of the world. You're like, but, nope. Never. Never in the entirety of the Bible did Jesus say, you are to be the police of the world. But he did say, you are to be the light to the world. How do you be the light to the world? You live like Christ every day. Day in and day out. Friendship, we say that we do ministry to help people become spiritually deep, financially stable, and relationally satisfied. We see these three areas as the keys to discipleship. Jesus Christ taught more about those three things than he did anything else. And so clearly, if Jesus talked about those three things more than anything else, then we really as individuals should understand. And so we, when a person becomes, a follower of Jesus Christ, we want to come alongside and help them get deep in their spiritual walk with God. Help them handle their finances in a way that honors God. Help their relationships. And oftentimes, let's be honest, we've got some messed up relationships and it's not easy to be the quote-unquote bigger person, to be the person that's constantly willing to reach out. But that's what God's called us to do. And as we as a church become a group of people who are grounded in spiritual truth, when we handle our finances in a way that honors God, and when we have peace in the relationships that we have, we become magnetic. People want to be around us. They want to know what's going on. How do we do this? How have you guys stayed married for so long? How can you guys afford to do that? How do you do that? And you can begin to share the truth. You don't even have to tell them it's from God right away. You can say, this is what I did. And they go, where did you get that? Well, it's actually from the Bible. Get out of here. No, I'm serious. There's more stuff there too. They want to spend time with us, and even if they don't, at least they respect us because we are consistent. Number one thing that people call Christians, you know what it is, isn't it? Hypocrites. They'll tell everyone else what they should do and shouldn't do. But I work next to that guy, and I wouldn't trust my kid with him. But when the church is working right, there's nothing like it. The church is the hope of the world. There's nothing like the church when the church is working right. The third one. The eternal destiny of my neighbor hangs in the balance. So we better get it right. The eternal destiny of my neighbor, your neighbor, our neighbors, hangs in the balance. So we better get it right. Look at this verse. Revelation chapter 20, verses 11 through 15. And I saw a great white throne, and the one sitting on it. The earth and the sky fled from his presence, but they found no place to hide. I saw the dead, both great and small, standing before God's throne, and the books were opened, including the book of life. And the dead were judged according to what they had done as recorded in the books. And the sea gave up its dead, and death and the grave gave up their dead, and all were judged according to their deeds. You know, the most important deed, the most important question, we'll circle back to the very first thing. Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? The only thing that can conquer death is what you believe about Jesus Christ. If you believe that he is the Savior, if you believe he is the Messiah, if you accept him as your Lord, then death has no power over you. And notice what he continues to say. He says, then death and the grave were thrown in the lake of fire. So death, disease, sickness, grave, it was all done away with. It's gone. This lake of fire is the second death. And anyone whose name was not found recorded in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire. Anyone whose name was not found recorded in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire. The eternal destiny of our neighbors hangs in the balance. We better get it right. And I know some people are like, listen, let's talk about overseas. Let's do a mission trip overseas. Let's go to the poverty-stricken area where, man, they don't have anything and we need to do this. And, let's go downtown and we can do this and we can do that. Listen, is any of that stuff bad? No, none of it's bad. But let me ask you a question. How about your neighbor Bob? He's a builder. He's your kid's little league coach. He's a great dad. He's an awesome husband. He's a tremendous neighbor. He brings your trash cans in. He talks to you when you're mowing the lawn. He does all this stuff. He is an awesome guy, but he doesn't know Jesus. He's going to hell. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? You stand there and have a conversation about nothing? What about your friend you just did wine and canvas with? Or cork and craft or pottery and pot? That's coming soon, I think. Can you imagine what that's going to look like? Anyways, okay, so why does everyone do ashtrays? Okay, Cynthia or Sally or Cammie, whatever. She's a great friend. She's an awesome mom. But she doesn't know Jesus. So she's going to hell. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to waver and wish her a great trip? What are you going to do? It's not my job. It is your job. They're in your life. They're in your sphere of influence. God has called you to be a light in their world. He's called you. Those of you that are still in school, college or high school, whatever the case may be, what that person you eat with? Every day you have the same table at lunch and you sit there and you talk about stuff. About the coolest thing or, what idiotic thing that Justin Bieber has done or, whatever the case may be. The person you share a biology table with. The person that you hang out with during marching band or the person that you hang out with during sports or you play sports with or maybe you do show choir with them. Whatever, they're great people. They're great friends, but they don't know Jesus. So they're going to hell. What are you going to do about it? You see, that's where we are. It's really uncomfortable when we boil it down to that, isn't it? Because the eternal destiny of your friend, of your neighbor, of your relative, of your husband, of your wife depends on it. So we better get it right. You know, up until this point at Friendship, most of our strategy has been based around getting people here so they can hear the message of Jesus Christ. We've done all sorts of stuff. We've done events like Uncivilized. We're like, hey, man, you should come and check it out. We've encouraged you to do that. We've done Easter egg, you know, events in the past for the city of Greenwood. We've done all sorts of stuff, big Sundays events. We even use our small groups as kind of a way that people can maybe connect there and come here to hear the message of Jesus Christ. And there's nothing wrong with that, and we're not getting rid of that. But it's time to add to it. It's time to take it to the next level, the next step. And I believe that we've got a tremendous base of people who really understand this last point, that the church literally impacts the eternal destiny of those that you care about, those that you're in. And so it's time for us to get into the subdivisions and the neighborhoods that surround us. Like, oh, great, we're going to do mailings. We're going to go door to door. We're going to ask them, hey, are you going to hell? You're in the wrong church. We'll give you directions. Now, in an organic way, and that is, we're going to find out where you live. Not like in a creepy week in a sign. We're going to find out where you live. What subdivision you live in? What neighborhood do you live in? We're going to find that out next week. We're actually going to have that on the worship guide. We want to know where you live. Because if we've got half a dozen people in a particular subdivision, what does that tell us? We've already got a great group there to get things rolling. Well, how's that going to look? What's it going to look like? Well, we came up with a little strategy. You know, we've got a strategy for everything, you know. Glorify God as an effective, influential church. We want to grow people spiritually, financially stable, relationally satisfied. And here's this next one. We want to reach one. We want to coach up. We want to multiply. That's it. Reach one is we want to reach one person, one family, one block, one street, one neighborhood at a time for Jesus Christ. And we're not doing it by, listen, come to church. No, we want to do it there. We want your home to be a lighthouse for Jesus Christ. And we're going to equip you how to do that. Next week, we're going to talk about it. Then we want to take them and we want to grow them up in Jesus Christ. But more than that, we want to take those that are coaches and help them be better coaches so that they can be coaches of coaches. We're going to talk about that in 2 weeks. And then finally, we're going to multiply. Isn't 1 + 1 = 2? It is, and it's awesome. Well done, you graduated from kindergarten. But then 2 + 2 = 4. And then 4 + 4 = 8. We're not just adding one at a time, because as we coach them up, they become someone who reaches someone else for Jesus Christ. We want to move from being the ministry destination where everything comes and kind of ends here, instead be a ministry hub where we're sending people out and equipping them into their neighborhoods, because the eternal destiny of your neighbor hangs in the balance, so we better get it right. Now, whenever we talk about this, there are critics. And some of you right now may be thinking these things, and I just want to challenge you, if you're thinking them, don't verbalize them, at least to me, because here's going to be the response. In the most Christ-like, influenced by Dave way possible, critics say this: oh, you just want numbers. Heck yeah. You're like, oh, church isn't supposed to be about numbers. Oh, yes, it is, because every number has a name. And every name has a story. And every story matters to God. Your story matters to God. Your story mattered so much to God that he put someone in your path so that you could accept Jesus Christ. And are you so ridiculously holding on to your tradition that you can't get in the path of somebody else so that they can have it too? Because that's the mindset. Us four and no more. It doesn't work. That's not what God's called us to do. Then there's the critic that says, well, the church, oh man, the church. It was meant to be small and intimate. You must hate the Bible then. Like, why would you say that? Because the church, Acts chapter 1, the church, the first church, the one that Jesus said, I will establish you, the one that the people that actually heard it from Jesus Christ actually started. It started with 120 people in a room, and then the next day it had over 3,000. It grew pretty quick. And not only did it grow pretty quick, but it changed the entire construct of the old world. It changed the entire Roman Empire. In fact, the church, because it was the church, brought the Roman Empire to its knees. Read your history books. It's true. And not by any war. You go, but the church is not an organization, is it? It's an organism. When we look at our world, every living thing. You have a baby, you go to the doctor's office, it's been 2 months since your last checkup, and the doctor says, your baby hasn't grown. What's your response? What's wrong with it? You plant a tree in the ground, you come out 2 months later, and it hasn't grown. What's your response? What's wrong with it? You go to a church for 20 years, and it doesn't grow, and you're like, oh, this is so good. Something's wrong with it. Because the church is not an organization, it is an organism, and every healthy organism in our world grows. Now, once we hit adulthood, we grow in different ways. Some outward, some other ways, but so our goal, and we're going to take each one of these over the next 3 weeks and lay them out, is to reach one, to coach up, and to multiply. We're going to dig into these individually and process through them and walk through them and lay out the strategy of how we're going to become the hope for the people of the South Side. I'm going to ask you something right on the outset. On the bottom of your worship guide, on the back left-hand side, there's a connection card. And one of the blanks is this: I'm committing to being here all 4 weeks. I want you to hear the whole thing. You're like, oh, this sounds great. Be here because you need to hear the rest of it. Because it's not about what we as a big church are going to do, but it's rather about what you're going to do in your community. And we want to come alongside, and we want to equip, and we want to financially support you to be able to do that, because your neighbor's eternal destiny hangs in the balance, and we want you to make sure you get it right. Now, before I close, after talking through these things, the fact that the church is the hope of the world, there's nothing like the church when the church is working right, and the fact that the eternal destiny of our neighbors hangs in the balance, so we better get it right. I've got to close with this. What about you? What about you? See, the most important question is the question that Jesus Christ asked in the very first verse we looked at. Who do you say that I am? There's only one answer. It's going to enable you to become all that God's called you to be, and that is that Jesus Christ is who he says he is. He died on the cross. He paid for my sins. That curse that I have that's been passed down from generation to generation to generation because of sin, that when I die, I will be forever separated from God in a very real place called hell. The only way to break free from that is to accept what Jesus Christ did on the cross when he said, it is finished. And so today I want to ask you, what about you? Who do you say Jesus is? In just a moment, I'm going to close in prayer, and during that, I'm going to lead you in just a simple prayer where you can respond. You can go, yeah, God, I believe. But I also want to challenge you, those of you who've already accepted Jesus Christ, those of you who already took that step of faith, what about you? What are you going to do? Because the responsibility isn't on just us. It's on you too. Father, we thank you that you, in your divine awesomeness, saw fit to put the message of Christ in our hands. And God, it's an awesome responsibility. It's also an unbelievable privilege. And God, I pray that we don't waste it. God, you didn't leave us here to police the world. You left us here to shine a light to who you are. And let us begin to live that way as individuals. And let us to begin to become that way as a church. That through how we live our lives, we are attractive and magnetic to your Son, Jesus Christ. Father, for those that are here this morning who have not yet taken that step of faith, I would pray just in the quietness of this moment that, God, they would just in their hearts and their minds pray something like this to you. Dear God, I believe. I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe he died in my place so I didn't have to. And God, I want to live my life as a light to everyone around me because I want them to know you too. And if you prayed that prayer just now, welcome to the family of God. God, now as we close, I pray that you would just, this wouldn't be a message that we walk out with our heads down low and with the quietness of our spirit and a somber. God, this is a moment where the kerosene that's been poured on our souls can be ignited with the match of your grace, recognizing that you have placed us in the opportunity. You have surrounded us with a mission field of people who are ready for the message of Christ to change them from the inside out. Let a fire grow in us and let us not be ashamed to let it be seen. And Father, we pray this in the powerful name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.